Welcome to another episode of the Gay Bar Archive Show, where we explore gay history one bar at a time. I'm your host, Art Smith, and today we'll be joined by club owner, storyteller, historian, volunteer, and self-professed professional homosexual, Rob Prolasty. So welcome to the show, Rob.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're quite welcome. So you are the lucky first interview that is going to be talking about Canadian bars.
Yay!
So far, everyone I've interviewed has focused on bars pretty much in the U.S. So, and your area of familiarity is mostly in Edmonton, Alberta area, correct?
Correct. Yeah. Like certainly I've spent a lot of time in places like Calgary and Vancouver, but Edmonton is where I have been working in gay bars for about 25 years. So.
And for people who are not particularly familiar with the layout of Canada, Alberta is kind of due north of Montana.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Edmonton is almost due east of like the Vancouver area, British Columbia.
Yeah, quite a bit further north, like northeast of Vancouver. Yeah, we're about as far north as you want to go, and certainly I can't think of any gay bars north of us.
Huh. All right then. Well, unless you sneak across the border into Alaska, I think there's a couple.
True enough.
There. So. So let's start with your knowledge of the Edmonton scene. From what you mentioned to me, I think one of the first places you wanted to talk about was Club 70.
Club 70 was the first gay bar in Edmonton. It opened 1970 in its first location. It was only there briefly before the landlords learned what was going on and locked the doors. And so that resulted in a bit of a legal battle, mostly because it was a private members club. There were records of the members there that they really wanted access to, as well as all the music and everything. So there was just no way for them to function anywhere else without being able to get access even to the property. They were able to find another location, and that second location would then be a gay bar in one form or another, under one name or another, for about 40 years.
So that second location was a gay club until, what, about 10 years ago?
Yeah, 2012 was the last time that location on 106th Street was a gay club. Currently, it's actually got a gay bookstore in it, so I don't know how much it's really changed, but certainly right in the heart of downtown. Ironically, just recently, the first location of Club 70 burned down. So that building is now no longer there.
So what was Club 70 like? I'm assuming we're going to talk about the second location because the first one was so kind of flash in the pan.
The first one was very, very flash in the pan. Now, obviously, we're going back to the 70s here. So my knowledge of Club 70 is all secondhand. But having worked in the space at that second location for a long time, I can sort of envision it. I've seen a few pictures. Obviously, there were not a lot of pictures. This was a time when certainly way pre-social media, way pre any sort of digital photography. And the people that were going weren't necessarily people that were going to want their pictures taken. It was a private members club, like I've said, so that means you needed to be a member or signed in by a member. They needed to have some sort of proof that you were gay or lesbian before you'd be allowed in, which made it super challenging for new people to the scene, because until you knew people, you couldn't go in. And how did you meet people until you were in?
Right.
So pardon?
Tourists would probably have a similar problem.
Absolutely, right? Like there was just no way that tourists could come. Now, certainly there were some publications very underground that kind of talked about cruising areas in Edmonton, Club 70 being one of them. It wasn't long, though, before the membership policy at Club 70 prompted people to open up larger, more public disco places, such as Flashback and the Roost.
Now, what other clubs were at the location where Club 70 was?
So Club 70 lasted from 1970 to about 1977, 78. There was a short-lived lesbian takeover called the Cha-Cha Palace. I think it was only about 6 months. And then it was rebranded as Boots and Saddle. Boots and Saddle would then last in that location under a couple owners until 2010, when the most recent owner passed away. We managed to plug along for a couple months after he died, Jim Schaefer, and then shut the doors. But the lesbian bar in Edmonton took advantage of that opportunity to relocate into that space under the name The Junction. And then that stayed for a couple years until 2012.
Alrighty then. Now, one bar in the course of my research of gay bars that once were, I think the first bar that I discovered in Edmonton was called The Roost. And I'm not exactly sure why that popped up so early in my research, because I wasn't specifically focused on looking at Canada. So what can you tell me about The Roost?
The Roost was iconic. Now, I think the word iconic maybe gets thrown around a lot, especially when we're talking about gay bars that have been closed. I think they tend to transcend what they actually were in people's memories. But it was a major dance club for 30 years. Certainly in the 80s, Flashback and The Roost had this competition. They were right across the street from each other. Flashback was kind of the Studio 54 of the Prairies. But when Flashback closed, The Roost dominated Edmonton's gay scene. It was a giant building. So it had a huge main floor with a giant patio that they eventually added on, but they also added on an upstairs level as well. So I think its capacity was 700, 800 people at its biggest. So it was a giant club. It was probably was the first gay bar I ever set foot into. It had a little deli area in the front where people could get some food, because it was also a private members club in the same way that Boots was. It wasn't bound by some of the same laws that other clubs would be, like where most straight public bars had to do last call at 2 and kick everybody out by 3. The Roost could just pull that liquor at 3 o'clock and people could dance till 4 or 5 in the morning. So it was good times.
Very cool. What kind of time frame was it when Roost opened, you know?
The Roost opened in September of 1977. And part of the reason I know that is because I was older than the Roost by just a hot minute, and then closed New Year's Eve 2007. So it had just passed the 30-year mark.
Wow. And what part of Edmonton was that located in?
Downtown. Most of Edmonton's gay clubs have been in the downtown. Certainly, if you include downtown with Oliver, which is the little area next to downtown, that's basically where they all are. Downtown Edmonton has always been the heart of its gay community. It is now, the Roost is now Canadian Border Services. So it is definitely a different kind of business now.
And you mentioned there was a bar called Flashback directly across the street.
Yeah, that was the second location of Flashback. Flashback was a disco that opened further west in, I'm going to get the dates wrong, so I'm not going to say it. I want to say 1976, but then 1977, not too long after The Roost opened, Flashback relocated because the location they were in was just too small. So they were right across from the brand new Roost, and that certainly provided the dynamics of gay nightlife for the 80s. Flashback was this incredible space, and again, I was never there, but I've talked to a lot of people that were that wanted to be very public. It was certainly a gay disco, but also very welcoming to the streets. It was very, very, very straight friendly. Got a lot of celebrities that went there. Certainly had a reputation, really, really, as the Studio 54 of the Prairies.
So unlike a lot of the bars that I've cataloged from that time frame, from the late 70s, early 80s. A lot of the larger, more elaborate clubs that I have archived over the course of this project were focused on male clientele. But from what you're telling me, if they're attracting some straight clientele also, I'm guessing that both of these clubs had somewhat of a mixed male-female clientele there.
There were certainly nights that were men only. Like I think Flashback had a men only Fridays. The Roost, I know even as late as the 90s kind of had a male focus on like Tuesdays and women focused more on Wednesdays, but certainly on the Friday and Saturday. So the main nights of these clubs, they were multi-gender and multi-orientation spaces that certainly provided a relief from places like Boots, which in the early 80s, there was quite a period there where they did not want women involved in the space. They did not want women in the space, lesbians specifically. Lesbians were rowdy, lesbians were violent, lesbians were destructive, a whole bunch of harmful stereotypes like that. But that just enforced more about the inclusivity of places like Flashback and the Roost.
And the music they played, were they predominantly focused as like a dance type club, more so than a cruising club or a just hang out and chill club? Was it mostly dance focused?
Yeah, for Flashback and the Roost, they were definitely discos. So it was dance focused. Places like Boots, it was a little more low key. You know, with the jukebox, people could kind of play what they want, which certainly, of course, caused its problems too. Sometimes when you get people that come down earlier and plug the jukebox with everything that they want, it made it a little bit more challenging for the people that came out later in the night.
You were kind of held captive by the early birds' music choices.
Absolutely. And sometimes that, you know, this is Alberta. So sometimes that meant country for hours and hours and hours. But yeah, if you wanted the best music, like, and you know, this is at a time when, you know, people weren't downloading music off the internet. So the DJs at Flashback and the Roost were pulling in those cutting edge dance tracks.
Now, to get a perspective on those two clubs and the scene in Edmonton back in the late 70s, early 80s, how big is Edmonton population wise? How many people live there roughly?
Edmonton is now just over a million.
Okay. And was it outside of the actual bar scene, was there a pretty thriving, what we would now call LGBTQ population, or was it a pretty conservative place that just had little pockets of gays and lesbians?
You know, Alberta is a fairly conservative province overall. Edmonton has always been kind of the anomaly in Alberta. There was a community certainly outside of the gay bars. Even before those gay bars existed in Edmonton, there were some popular downtown hotels that were very like gay friendly. But there were, even as far back as the late 70s, early 80s, there were gay social groups. There were gay sports teams. There was a group called Women's Space that provided alternatives to bars and activities for Edmonton's lesbian community. So it was there. It was maybe challenging to access, though. Again, if you didn't know where to go, there certainly wasn't a lot of media coverage. Edmonton has had a gay community center from as far back as the early 70s that was a easily accessible place to find out information about where to go at night, though. So that if you were just coming out or if you were just visiting, there was that resource to say, yeah, you're going to want to go to these bars, or you're going to want to avoid these areas, or you're going to want to cruise this hill kind of thing.
Now, were you born there?
Yeah, I was born in Edmonton, not too far from the location of all these places, actually, and still kind of live very close to all these places as well. So I really feel connected to Edmonton's downtown and the queer community there.
So as you were coming of age and exploring your own sexuality, what was your kind of impression of Alberta? Did you feel comfortable there? Did you feel a little repressed? What kind of vibe did you get from the local environment?
So I was coming out in the early to mid 90s. There was no mainstream coverage that was remotely queer. There weren't queer characters on television. There were certainly like no out queer musicians that I knew of. And politically, it was a really hot time in Alberta. Alberta was actively fighting the queer community, taking them to court to defend their right to discriminate. The Delwyn Vreen case was happening while I was coming out, and that was a case where a teacher had been fired and he was suing to ensure that couldn't happen to anybody else. But there was a lot of pushback sanctioned by the government. But it was not a great time to be coming out. And when the government of the province that you're living in is telling you, we want the right to be able to fire you, and we want the right to be able to evict you, that's a hard message to be hearing when it's the first messaging that you're hearing about what it's like to be gay.
So did that give you any, did you consider moving somewhere more liberal from there, or was that just home and you were going to stick it out and do what you could?
I think there was a brief time that I wanted to move to Vancouver. I kind of saw Vancouver as this, you know, Canadian San Francisco, this amazing gay mecca that I wanted to, but the pull of Edmonton ended up being just too strong. I had moved to an even smaller center for university, but when that university degree finished, all I really wanted to do was be back in Edmonton. So at that point, I was much more secure in my identity and my sexuality, and I knew the importance of people contributing and giving back to the their community to make it easier on the next generation coming out. So that's really what I wanted to do. And that's how I started my career in gay male life.
Now, you mentioned to me that that part of your being, part of your career involved being a club owner. What club did you own?
So I am one of the owners of Evolution Wonderland, which is currently Edmonton's only gay bar. In 2022, a lot of straight bars are well aware of the importance of being gay friendly and getting those gay dollars with drag nights or pop-up queer events. But we are the only year-round queer space in Edmonton that I own. It's a family-owned business with myself and my uncles, who had owned some gay hotels in Palm Springs and then moved back to Canada. And we decided to open it up. At the time that we opened it up in 2013, there were a few other bars, but now it is just us.
Very cool. Well, we'll get into a little more description of Evolution in just a minute, but you also mentioned another bar in Edmonton that you have some history with, and that was Buddy's. What was Buddy's like?
Buddy's had originally started in 1996 as a pub. It was kind of on the opposite end of downtown from the Roost and Boots. So it was a nice little alternative for that. It was an upper level bar. And again, it was mostly pub. It did have a dance floor for later on at night. One of the great stories about that early Buddy's is that it was across the street from a Dairy Queen, and the windows on this second story all opened up. So the drag queens would actually get people to hold the speakers up in the windows and run across the street to perform at the Dairy Queen, which was, I'm sure, quite traffic stopping. Not a lot of video footage of it, sadly. We have been able to find a couple grainy pictures. Buddies eventually realized that they were outgrowing that space and found us another location. Edmonton gay bars love to move around. They found another location that was more of a dance club than a pub, but they eventually opened up kind of a second location right above to bring back that pub atmosphere. Buddy's ended up closing in 2015, and Woody's, its sibling pub, closed in 2016.
So Buddy's and Woody's, were they both kind of mixed clientele, or were they going back to the more of an all-male?
No, they were definitely mixed. There was a hot minute where Buddy's had been pushing for kind of a more male focus, to the point where there was a few weeks where it was free for men, but there was a cover charge for women that did not go over well and did not last very long. But yeah, for the most part, certainly in my experience, even after the walls kind of came down in Boots and Boots was mixed, all the spaces have been fairly mixed. Edmonton's just too small to segregate based on genders. Even the lesbian bars in Edmonton have always been mixed spaces.
So it kind of sounds like, from what you've mentioned so far, all the clubs we've talked about, all the spaces, Club 70, Boots, Junction, The Roost, Buddies, they were all pretty much closed by the time you decided to open Evolution.
I don't know that. I hope it wasn't me, because I worked at all of them. But no, they all were. It was all different circumstances, I guess, on why they closed. The Roost, the owner was just getting older, and he just wanted to be done with it. They were losing a lot of business to Buddies, so I'm sure that kind of played in the factor. The Roost had been 7 days a week, but by its final year, it was really only busy on Saturday nights. It was down to four nights a week. Buddies was kind of on the ascendancy. And then I guess the same kind of thing happened with Buddies after we opened. They were seven nights a week, but we opened and then we were on the ascendancy and kind of whittled away until we were done with this. And then there were some flash in the pans after the Roost opened as well. Places like Flash, places like Upstairs and Play that opened briefly, trying to fill that void caused by the Roost closing. Yeah, and the Junction was the final incarnation of the Boot space. The landlord decided after 2 years that they weren't going to renew that lease. They wanted to transition out of that space being a bar restaurant space. And that was certainly a blow to the community, because it was this great community space that had a bar with a dance floor and a restaurant for families and a nice little patio. And there's never really been anything like that since, sadly.
So once you saw that these clubs were kind of closing down, some of the clubs that, you know, you might label as iconic or, you know, had some history with Edmonton, what was it that was going through your mind that you said, oh, all these bars are closing down, we should open up a bar?
Well, I guess when we opened it up, there was still a really strong and thriving queer nightlife scene. So I guess we just wanted a piece of that, or I guess maybe some ego, thinking that, you know, we could do things differently or do things better. Yeah, and then it certainly, so we've been open now 8 years and things have changed a lot more since. So if I had to do it over again, would I? I'm not sure. Like, I think I probably would go something a little bit more pub than what we are right now. We're a basement space. You know, we can't really be anything other than the dance club that we are. We're never going to be able to be like a happy hour, or even if we have a kitchen, I don't think people are going to come down into a basement for food. But I still think that the queer dance club, the queer disco, is a super important component of a city and a queer community. That opportunity to be amongst your own people, and to be the majority, and for a kid just coming out to be able to walk down the stairs and feel those feelings that I felt in the 90s when I walked into places like the Roost or Buddies, or, you know, Boys Town or Detours in Calgary, or the Odyssey in Vancouver. There's nothing like that feeling of empowerment and pride and celebration and fear and sexuality. It's a wonderful feeling that you can really only get walking into a crowded gay bar.
Yeah. How big is the Evolution?
Our capacity is about 350.
Okay.
So certainly down from the juggernauts of Flashback and the Roost, but the biggest since the Roost, for sure. That can be a pro and a con. It's great when we need it, but it's very big when we don't. So.
And are you open every night or only on the weekends? How do you operate that?
No, we're currently just Thursday to Sunday. We were 7 days a week when we opened, and we just weren't the right space for it. So we're now just Thursday to Sunday. Thursdays and Sundays are kind of just chill, drag shows, and then we close after the show ends. Friday and Saturday, we usually have early entertainment, and then the DJ starts, and we go until we have to close. So, yeah. Obviously, COVID's been very challenging on entertainment and formatting, but hopefully we're through that now.
How close is the closest gay bar to you?
The closest gay bar to us would be Calgary, so it's 300 kilometers. It's a 3-hour drive. I was just there this last weekend. They only have the one dance club as well, Twisted Element, which I believe is now at 15 or 16 years. But they also have a couple other smaller pubs. So they have more gay bars in Calgary.
So pretty much in Edmonton, you are the end-all be-all of the gay community there. You are the bar, the meeting place.
We are, but Edmonton also has a lot of very known gay-friendly spaces. We have groups that put on queer events and drag shows all over the place. So in a way, being the only gay bar, but we're the only gay bar at a time when the competition for the gay dollar has actually never been higher. And from a consumer standpoint, that's got to be good, because there's lots of events going on that can, like, if this gay bar is not what you want, chances are there's going to be one of these events that it addresses, whether it's the music you need or the environment you want or the clientele that you get. Whereas we're kind of left trying to be a gay club that appeals to everyone of all genders from 18 to 80. And that can be a very challenging task.
Has that been part of your mission statement since you opened? Has it always been like a queer bar that embraces?
Yeah, and I don't think I'd ever want to change that. Like, I still think it's super important. Sometimes I wonder if, you know, we're our own worst enemy by having that giant pride flag outside. But we're straight friendly. We absolutely, like, especially some of the drag shows, the majority of the crowd might even be straight at those shows. But I would never want to get rid of our queer identity, just the same way as I'd never want to get rid of my own queer identity. It's important.
Well, that's definitely something that we're seeing in a lot of the newer bars that are opening up, or a lot of the bars that are kind of reinventing themselves, is broadening their horizons, kind of expanding their market reach to get to the people that do not fall into the traditional, you know, gay or lesbian segment. There's one bar that opened up in Manhattan not quite a year ago, that is called Q. And the letter Q they chose because of queer. They wanted to embrace everybody. They have areas and activities for people that are gay or lesbian or bi or trans or whatever. They're not trying to be focused on one group. And that seems to be kind of a winning recipe these days for the gay bars that are going to continue and thrive.
See, I was at Q about a month ago, and maybe it was just the night that I was there, but it was an unusually gay male space that I'm not used to being in, because there weren't any women the night that I was there. There was not really any other drag queens other than the ones that we were there with. So I'm not used to being in such a gay male space as what I experienced there that night. But I really think that comes down to the difference in population size too. Certainly we try to reflect in our staff, you know, so that we have gay men and women and trans people and drag performers of all ages, so that people know that the space is also reflective of what the staff is. So it goes back and forth. And the customer base really is all over the place too. We really do have a full multi-gendered and multi-raced community that comes quite regularly. Whereas previously my experience with Edmonton gay bars was that even though they were welcoming to everybody, it was still very gay male focused, and certainly the spaces were very white. I think Edmonton has also just become increasingly multicultural in the last decade, so that's probably just transitioning also into the space. But
so you're saying the actual population of Edmonton is actually more diverse now than it was 20 or 30 years ago?
Yeah, I would certainly say so based on my experience, absolutely. And so, of course, that's bound to reflect in its queer spaces as well. Just when you get, just by a city getting more people of color, you're going to get more queer people of color. So,
absolutely. Now, you've, in addition to owning a bar, you've also labeled yourself as a storyteller, a historian, a volunteer, and in essence, a professional homosexual.
Yeah.
I know you do some work with the Edmonton Queer History Project. So why don't we talk a little bit about that project?
For sure.
And what your involvement with them is.
The Edmonton Queer History Project has been around for a number of years now, but it wasn't until the COVID shutdown of Evolution that I was able to have the time to get involved. And it just worked out that they were kicking off a new phase of the project. They were working on a downtown history tour and walking map, so that they really wanted some well-researched pieces on the locations in, for the most part, Edmonton's pre-2000 history. So it was spaces like Club 70. It was on social groups like Women's Space, which was that lesbian group that I talked about. It was on places like The Hill, which was a cruising area for male hustlers. It was early church groups or sports teams, or it was all of those components that kind of got us where we were, but it was all linked to a space. So there was this place just a couple blocks away called Centennial Plaza, where some of the early Pride events were held. So we used that space to tell the story of the history of the Edmonton Pride Festival. Or, you know, there was the downtown police station, where we used that location to tell the story of Edmonton's struggles, of Edmonton's queer community's struggles with policing and with archaic laws and getting those laws changed to the point where there was a liaison committee to work with the community, to the point where those police were marching in the parade rather than just policing from the sideline. So it was a wonderful project to work on, and I'm super excited to see where it goes from here. We're expanding it to other areas of the city that are really excited and energized by seeing what we've done for downtown, and they want to know what their own more local queer history is, whether that is going west into Oliver and telling the story of some of the bars and businesses and magazines that were based there, crossing the river into Old Strathcona to talk about things like the Fringe Festival and how queer performers kind of left the gay bars in groups like Guys in Disguise, and took drag and queer art out into the sunlight and the straight world.
It sounds like you're making a really good effort to actually record as much as you can about Edmonton and Alberta's, you know, queer history, which is something that to me is getting more and more important, because for so many decades, it was kind of an underground world. It wasn't recorded in mainstream media. It wasn't in television, it wasn't in the newspapers, it wasn't anywhere unless it was, you know, criminal. If there were people being arrested or put in jail for doing something that was not considered acceptable and fell under the gay umbrella, then it probably made the news somewhere. But other than that, the stories of our drag queens, of our fundraisers, of our organizations, of our bars, so much of that is kind of scattered out there, and it's a matter of collecting it all and capturing the stories, which is part of why I started doing these interview segments, is so that people that were actually there can talk about, you know, what the history was and where these bars were and what they were like, because that's not out there. And so it's really kind of refreshing to find people from all these different parts all over the country and all over the world that have stories to tell about what their particular environment was like, you know, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and what the scene was like and how it's kind of evolved over the decades. I know as an American, I have a mindset of Canada being a little bit more open-minded and liberal than the U.S. is, but apparently that wasn't the case so much in Alberta for quite a while. I mean, it wasn't flagrantly, you know, accepting of the gay lifestyle until more recently.
Well, it's, you know, Alberta in a lot of ways, a lot of people kind of refer to Alberta as the Texas of Canada. So it's that kind of thing, right? You know, the coasts and the major cities are super accepting. You know, like we have our San Francisco and New York too. Like we've got Montreal, we've got Toronto, we've got Vancouver. But right. There's this whole big area in the middle that still has queer people. There's still queer people in small cities like Edmonton, you know, and then there's the queer people that are in the small towns that end up coming to Edmonton, seeing that as this mecca. So it's all a matter of perspective. But it's so important that these stories are being chronicled, whether it's with our Queer History Project here or something like this, because we're running out of time to get those stories from the people that were actually there. We're losing those eyewitness accounts. And because nothing has been chronicled in any written down or digitized format, it's been an oral history. So we have to record it while we still have those voices.
Absolutely. Now, is your project also aiming to digitize as much as possible? Is that a big part of your archiving project?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, we've just entered in with a new partnership with a group that's going to help us digitize some of the gay magazines. When I was doing the research for some of the pieces that I was working on, it was so frustrating to find that nobody's got the hard copies of some of these old magazines like Times 10, that was around from 1993 to 2005. And there's just no paper copies left. So we're trying to track what we can and digitize them, whether it's something like that, or like the Woman Space newsletter that they like, so that lesbian group has been around since 1983 and put out a monthly kind of newsletter for their membership. Well, in that newsletter, there's pieces about bars opening and bars closing and the struggles of the lesbian community finding acceptance at bars. And so having that running from 1983 to like 2003, 2004, that's an amazing resource for queer historians. One of the most kind of magical moments that I had when I was researching was getting into our city archives here and getting my hands on copies of Fine Print magazine, which was a monthly publication put out in 1983 into 84. I think it came out of one of the Edmonton sports teams at the time, but really became a monthly publication for the entire city. So having that actual physical copy in my hand was just amazing. Like, it just smelled like history. Yeah, we want to get those digitized and available to everybody so that everybody can read those firsthand accounts of what was going on and what it was like to be queer and LGBT at that time in Edmonton.
And I've encountered similar issues recording the history of the gay bars all over the place because so many of the archives are not digitized. And I've also, on my website, I have a page that is called Archives. And on that page, I put links to the LGBT archives from all over the country and the world as I stumble across them. So if somebody's looking, because that is another challenge. I mean, you can build the greatest archive in the world, but if nobody knows how to find the archive for the Edmonton Queer History Project, they're not going to ever see what you do. And yeah. So I decided when I was putting my project together, partly as a tool for myself, so I would have a comprehensive list of some of these different places as I need to go and look for information, but also for everybody else that wants to do the research, you know, it's convenient to be able to go there and say, well, yeah, there's also, you know, this other archive that may have some information. Maybe there's a national Canadian gay archive, or there's a French-speaking, you know, one for French-speaking Canada. And you can kind of cross-reference and discover them. So I will definitely put a link up there to the website for Edmonton Queer History Project, which I believe is edmontonqueerhistoryproject.ca. And that way people can find it and kind of look through it and find some information about what the gay history has been like in the Edmonton area. So
our city does have an archives that has a gay section as well. So like feeling that it's got some great resources in there, including some just minutes from the early community center or meeting minutes from the early days of the AIDS network, which is now HIV Edmonton. So that was a great resource base for us to use when we were compiling our little write-ups for the map.
Now from, you mentioned that Club 70 opened around 1970. Was there much of a gay history prior to 1970 that you've been able to track down, or is that pretty much the beginning of the story from what you've been able to find so far?
That's the beginning of the bar stuff. We certainly found some history that predates it. Even prior to that, there were downtown hotels where gays and lesbians would gather. 1942, there was a massive sex scandal that rocked Edmonton's theater community, like a gay sex scandal that rocked it. And now we're kind of trying to pull some articles even earlier about some arrests for drag, for people cross-dressing in the 30s and being arrested for that, for being presenting in clothing not suitable to their gender. It might be impossible to know if those people were gay and lesbian, especially when you're getting into times where those words were not in the common knowledge, but certainly any sort of gender fluid or gender expansive presentation is part of our community history.
Yeah, and we see that everywhere. Typically, before World War II, you didn't really see much in the way of identity as gay, as far as you didn't find bars, restaurants, businesses proclaiming anywhere publicly in any listing, any description that they were gay. It was just kind of an underground kind of, a little hint here and a little sign there that gave you the general idea. But a lot of times they were more labeled as artsy or bohemian or, something like that. And you find that everywhere, not just in small towns like Edmonton, but even if you go to New York or San Francisco or LA, you still find suggestions that these places were gay or lesbian or whatever the term was, but not a blatant description so much. So where do you see this going forward now? You're the only gay bar left in Edmonton. Do you think that there's going to be a return to having more blatantly gay or blatantly queer establishments, or is it going to be kind of everybody goes everywhere and the gay community just kind of blends in with the rest of the world?
I suspect that might be the case, at least in a city of Edmonton size. So it's kind of middle, right? So the numbers of queer community are not there to the point where they can sustain a bunch of spaces like in New York, but it's greater than the future of gay bars is actually in smaller cities. Even like maybe we're just kind of in this middle space right now where there's not enough of us to sustain a whole bunch of spaces, but the city, there's still enough of us for us to queer up other spaces. So it'll be very, really interesting to see what happens. I know there's always talk and rumors about people planning on opening up another gay bar that, Edmonton should only have one, but historically, it's getting harder to sustain more than one. I really think Edmonton needs a 7 days a week kind of gay pub. I think that would go really, really well, and I'd love to be in the position to open that up, but I'm sure somebody will.
Or maybe something that's not specifically alcohol-related. There's one that just opened up in Washington, D.C. called As You Are Bar. And it was opened by two lesbians, but they profess to be open to the entire queer community. And they also have a daytime element that has kind of a coffee shop, sandwich area. You can come in and use their Wi-Fi and whatever. And even children can go in there during the day. And I think all the adult entertainment and alcohol is pretty much focused upstairs. And they will occasionally have drag shows and other entertainers, live entertainment, whatever. But that way it's not specifically alcohol focused, because that is, I know in the research that I've done and the people I've contacted, I've gotten a little bit of kickback about, you know, why gay bars? Why do you have to focus on the alcohol? And I'm not, I mean, as gay bars were so much more than a place to go get a drink.
Absolutely. Gay bars were where people held meetings to plan political protests. They were where drag queens hosted fundraisers to raise money for those with HIV and AIDS when the government wasn't giving them any money. Gay bars have been the heart of the community. Sadly, the alcohol is always a part of that. That's how they paid the bills. It certainly creates its own problems. I'm 11 years sober, but yeah, I was a hot mess working in gay nightlife for a long time with drugs and alcohol. So a space like you're talking about that's kind of got that sober component sounds pretty wonderful to me.
Yeah, and I think they also wanted to be able to reach out to that 14-year-old who needed a safe place to go, because, you know, when I came out, which was the late 70s, like 20 years before you did, when I came out, there was no place for a teenager. I mean, if you were old enough to drink, you could go to a bar, obviously. But if you were in those early teen years, you didn't have anywhere to get any guidance or connect with community. So I think that's part of their idea too, is that if you're 14, 15, 16, you can be there, you can be in a safe space, and you don't have to worry about, you know, the alcohol and drug scene, because it's not geared that way.
Edmonton certainly has a increased awareness of the need for that. There's a lot of all ages kind of drag events that happen. We've even suspended our liquor license a few nights just so that we are able to participate in that. I know when I came out, it was a licensed coffee shop, but it was still a coffee shop that you could go to. There was no age restrictions on it. That was an explicitly gay coffee shop called Boys Town. I did not realize that it was underneath a gay bar. I was 16, so a gay bar was not even on the radar of things that I really wanted. But yeah, that's certainly part of that history too, is those cafes and restaurants that were also very queer, or at least queer friendly, where people could go when they couldn't go to bars. And obviously bars close late at night too. So there's those 24-hour spaces, whether they're restaurants or spaces like bathhouses, where people are still making those connections and there's still that community happening.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you have a gay space in Edmonton, and that you've been able to keep Evolution open for 8 or 9 years, and hopefully will continue to keep it open for quite a while longer. Because I think, despite the fact that gay people can go pretty much anywhere to have a cocktail, you still need your own space sometimes. You know, somewhere where everybody in the space identifies with, you know, your mindset and what's going on in your life and the struggles you're fighting. And so I think it's really important that we still have some gay, you know, dedicated gay spaces. And so I hope Evolution's around for a long time to come. And I appreciate the work that you're putting into, you know, the Edmonton Queer History Project and kind of preserving some of the story for future generations to understand what we went through and what the evolution of the area. So thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And thank you for taking the time to tell us about some of the history of the clubs in the Edmonton area. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, I love talking about them. Like I grew up in gay bars. So that's some of my best memories. Sure, there's lots of sad memories too and painful stuff, but yeah, for the most part, looking back, it's been a wonderful life that's been centered in gay bars. So I love talking about them.
Well, I'm glad you had some family to support to get you into the business too, because that sounds like that was an important part of your support structure, is having a couple of uncles who could, you know, kind of give you a little bit of support in your coming out process as well.
Yeah, absolutely. My uncle and his partner have been together since 1983. They met at Flashback and have been together ever since. So that's pretty wonderful. So I've certainly enjoyed being able to be on this journey with them. So,
well, good luck. We hope you have many more years with Evolution and a lot of success in the Edmonton market.
Thank you.
That concludes another episode of the Gabe Archive Show. For more information about this episode, or to find more episodes, visit GabeArchives.com.